Associate Engineer for the Division of Water Rights. Glad to be here for this public meeting for the Pine and Wawa Valleys. We're going to be talking about the policy today. We are not going to be making any decisions on any pending applications today. If you came here expecting us to make an announcement, you'd probably just leave them, but that's not going to happen. But we do want to talk to you about the policy that we have in Pine and Wawa Valley. We're going to explain some of the things that we've been looking at and we've been contemplating as we've been considering things that we have before us. We are going to record the proceedings today. John Solomon is over here with the recording device. And as you speak, if you'd like to speak at the time, and it's not that you have to speak while you're here, but if you speak, just speak loudly so that it will pick information up. I think we've got the microphone here. Does it seem to be picking me up okay? So as you speak loudly so that we can have a good record. We do have a sign-up list James has back here in the back. If you'd like to have your name on the record that we can kind of keep you informed on things that we do, it would be good to know who you're here and how to contact you there if you want to put that information down. John tells me we have 140 hours on the recording device is all we have available. So if we go longer than that, we might have to adjourn and come back when we get a new device. But so you don't have to keep your comments real short. But so we do have time, but hopefully we won't be here now. But we did want to make you aware of what we're doing out here, what things that we're considering. We're happy today to have the USGS and the gardeners here actually involved in this study that we are doing out in the Wawa and Pine Valley areas. We're going to actually have him come up and just tell us a little bit about the study, where we are, and go through some information on that study and talk about that. He's got some slides to go through and let us know what's happening there. After that, I'm going to have Kurt West, who's our regional engineer, come up and talk about the existing policy that we have in place, and we'll have a discussion about why the need for this meeting. But we really have a policy in place that under the existing policy, I'm having a difficult time feeling like I can do anything with any kind of application that has come before us, and we'll kind of explain about that as we talk a little bit about the policy. We have a long-term policy established out in these areas that as we've done research, we're not quite sure where those policies actually came from and developed. We couldn't find public meetings, we couldn't find processes that went through us. I thought, well, before we do anything, I've got to make sure that we have a public process we go through to make sure that you're aware of decisions we're making, considerations that we're making, and why we're proposing to go over them. So we'll just talk a little bit about that. We'll do that for us. And after that, we'll have a question session when we talk about it. So any questions before we turn the time over to you? Okay.
Thanks. Switch out the presentations here. And this one works too.
Ms. Will?
Fantastic. Okay, well, I just wanted to talk about 15 or 20 minutes or so, just to give everybody an update on an aquifer study we're doing out in Pine and Wawa Valley. There had been growing, development proposals and water rights filings in these valleys, and what was already known at the time about the aquifer systems out there and how they work and the budgets and the water that might be available all came from a study that has a couple studies that were done in the early 70s. That coupled with the fact that there's not much out there, there aren't many wells out there. Even those studies from the 70s were really based on pretty limited information. So as some proposals and new water rights filings were coming in, little by little over the course of about a year, maybe a year and a half, we had some meetings with the state engineer's office, with Iron County, and with the Bureau of Land Management, all parties that had interests in the issue. And so we came together, and we were able, between the four groups, we were able to cobble up enough money to go ahead and undergo a new study out here that would should do a lot, you know, 40 years later, just about. So there's a bunch of new information available now. We've got some new techniques, and surprisingly, even though these areas are fairly empty, there's some new wells out there and some new places for us to get information. So this slide is probably, I imagine everybody in here knows what these valleys are and what they look like, so go through this pretty quick. But, you know, they're Pine and Wawa valleys, large valleys, but really minimally developed. They're just, you know, there's the Wawa Ranch and Wawa Valley, and then for the most part, the Desert Experimental Range and Pine Valley, and then some summer homes around. But there's not a lot out there. Pretty limited springs and surface water, and the veil and what is out there is appropriated. A lot of those, there's water rights on those springs and things. And the groundwater system out in this area is pretty complicated. I'll show this, I think, in a few more slides. Let me just get on to the next slide to give an example about that. So this is just, I think everybody probably knows where we are, but we're right over here in Milford, just off the side. So there's Highway 21 running through, and these two valleys are our area of concern. This information just kind of runs down what's known about the aquifer and the water budgets, a quick summary from those 1970s studies. The recharge, you know, the amount of water that was estimated from those studies to replenish the aquifers was on average about 28,000 acre-feet a year. Most of that in Pine Valley, 21,000 in Pine Valley, with 7,000 landing in, or recharging the aquifer in Wawa Valley. And then in that report, they made an estimate that about 8,500 acre-feet of that comes back out in springs and plant transpiration, plant consumption in the mountains. So you end up with about 19,000 acre-feet a year in these two valleys that originates as melting snow and precipitation falling on the mountains, ultimately getting into the valley aquifers. But what makes these valleys different than most of the surrounding valleys, Tule, Snake, Fish Springs, Slide, everywhere else, all the other valleys have an area out in the middle where the water table gets really close to land surface, and there's springs out there, maybe a little bit of surface water. At the very least, there's rheanophyte plants that you can see. Their roots are tapped down in the water. These valleys don't have that. All over in these valleys, the water is, it's hundreds of feet of water. It's 700 or 800 feet in certain parts of the valley, 200 or 300 in other parts. So that, what happens is that 19,000 acre feet, just roughly 20,000 acre feet that's getting in there, is going somewhere. Normally what happens is it's coming in the high mountains, moving to these valley center areas, and coming back out at the wetlands and springs. These valleys don't have that. If it wasn't going somewhere, it would just keep adding and fill up and overflow, but it must be going out. So the interesting thing about these valleys is we know for a fact that amount of water must be leaving, or approximately that amount, must be leaving the valleys and heading off to the north towards Sevier Lake and Tule Valley, and maybe on up to Fish Springs. There's a lot we don't know, but that's one of the things that makes this situation a little bit peculiar and different. So, knowing that all we had was that information from the 70s, like I said, we got together with a few groups and decided there was a certain particular set of study objectives that we wanted to look at with this. And so, this just lists those real quick. What we were doing was we're taking a representative set of some of the springs that are surrounding the two valleys up in the foothills and making measurements of those so we can kind of establish a baseline of what the discharge of those springs is and what their natural variation is seasonally and from year to year. So we're working on that. We have that going on at Wawa and some other selected representative BLM springs. And then we wanted to collect as much new information as we could to update. I have here a conceptual model of the groundwater system. I mean, really, our ideas of how we think it works. Update the budgets, the water budgets. Update where we think water gets in, how fast and what directions it's moving, and where it's leaving the valleys. And then one thing we wanted to focus on in particular was to evaluate the connection of the springs that seem to surround these valleys in both of the foothills and the mountain fronts, the connection between those and the valley water tables. The old report, I think, mentioned that it suspected a lot of those springs were probably perched. So water's seeping into the ground of the mountains, staying high, and coming out in those aquifer or in those springs. And that if that were the case, then pumping the valley aquifers, if that were the case, if they were not connected, wouldn't have an impact on them. So that was something we wanted to focus on. And then we're going to use all of the new information we get to update. This is a Great Basin numerical groundwater model that we use to sort of test ideas and look at predictions and things. And it's one that we have in our office that we've been working on, and it's been evolving for years now, 5 years or so. And it would be a tool that we would use to do some modeling analysis on Pine and Wawa Valleys in the future. But again, when that model was built, there are places inside that model where it was calibrated to lots of known information, and there are places like Pine and Wawa Valley where there was hardly anything to constrain or confine that model. So our approach to kind of meeting these objectives was, you know, to set up and monitor spring discharge and water levels in wells at springs. We conduct a well inventory. We go through all the water rights records and look at everything that's been drilled, see if there's anything we missed back in the last study or that we could potentially gain access to now, and get water levels and information, historical information, on all the wells that are available. Bullet three is just, we do some water chemistry that actually gives us more information than just the water quality. It gives us information on how long the water's been underground. Patterns of it will let us look at the directions of flow, and some of the other chemistry gives us good indications of the sources of the water. So that helps us get to looking at whether water in a well down here is connected, hydraulically connected, to water in a spring above it somewhere. So that was what the chemistry was for. And then we're going to update the estimates of, I have groundwater evapotranspiration. That's just the estimate. That's the discharge, the other end of the system where the water's leaving the aquifer. Like I said, it doesn't happen in Pine and Wawa Valleys here. We think it happens someplace to the north. So what we need to improve our numerical model was an update of that number where we think it's happening. So that what we did was we proposed to do some new surveys of these discharge areas and estimates of the amount of groundwater leaving at the surrounding Sevier Lake and all the way up in Tule Valley. It seems crazy, and like those are a long way away from Pine and Wawa Valleys, but that water's got to be going somewhere, and that's the most likely place. We're also going to provide updated estimates of recharge. So I mentioned there was 28,000 acre feet of recharge to the aquifer occurring through melting snow melt and precipitation seeping in the mountain areas. That was based on techniques of distributing precipitation and things that were new or that were common when the last report was done, and we've got some pretty improved techniques now. So part of the study is going to include that to help update the budget all in all. Also, we performed an aquifer test, a 7-day aquifer test, which was done this past late summer in the fall, one in each of the valleys, and to give us some good information about the aquifer properties, and all going toward helping calibrate this numerical model that we have in our office. Like I mentioned, at the end, what we're going to do is we're going to pull all this information together that we've learned and put it into that numerical model. And it's a great working model regionally, but as like I said, right now, it just wasn't founded on much in these valleys because there wasn't much information in the past. 3-year project schedule. We began work a year ago last September. So September 2012 is when we first got out there and got to do our well inventory, spring inventory, see what was available. We got our first round of sampling done by Christmas that year, and began our monitoring, figured out which springs we were going to monitor, and began that. Second year of the project, we continued to monitor the springs. This past summer, we went out and did all of our field surveying and reconnaissance to make these updated discharge measurements in Tule Valley and around Sevier Lake. And we performed two 7-day aquifer tests, which I figured we'd probably get done in about 3.5 weeks. And I think we worked on those from, I don't know, end of August through the end of September, end of October or something. It took a while. It turns out they're a little more complicated than you think. But that was good. We got those done and finished up our sampling. So in the third year, the big things that are coming in the third year really are a lot of more of the office analysis and number crunching. So we're going to make those updates of the recharge to the aquifer. I'm going to go ahead and and process, you know, all the field work we've done, continue to get the rest of the chemistry and interpret that. Really everything, we've done all the field work so far. Really everything else is kind of coming now in this second year and a half that we're in. And then, so that's just kind of an update on the study, sort of how it began and what we're doing, what the timeline is. I have a few slides I was going to show, just a few things that are kind of interesting, and just this is a little preliminary early data that came in after the first year of being out in the field, and it just gives an example of some of the things maybe that we didn't know ahead of time, that were some surprises that we're finding out. This picture right here is just showing, these dots are all the wells that were available from which information came for the previous study, and up until the beginning of this study. And you apologize, it's really bright in this room, so I know you can hardly see it, but there's a set of really light gray lines on here. And what those are, they're contours of the water table elevation based on the water levels in those wells. And we use that as our first indication of what direction water's flowing. So the example here is just that the high contours are here in both valleys. The low contours are to the north. There's long, long, many mile stretches with no wells, no water level in the middle. And so we assume that they just sort of step down from the water level elevation we measure in one well to the next. And so we get our first general idea. In that case, water would be moving in both of these valleys from south to the north. You can see there's a lot more dots on this page. After we went out and did our first well inventory, this was the new number of wells and water levels we were able to pick up and kind of refine this map. And this is just sort of a preliminary sketch, but you can see the blue lines on top of the, well, I'd say again, with the light coming in, it's hard to see the gray lines. But for example, in Pine Valley, before we had these new water levels, we assumed that the gray lines and the contours just pretty much kind of went back and forth this way, and water would go from high level to low level perpendicular to those lines. So we had water going sort of straight north in Pine Valley. Once we got these new water levels and these wells we didn't have, although this is just an example here where now the lines run straight east to west, showing water direction moving, you know, in a very different way than we even thought it did a year ago. So you know, adding new information, looking up the new wells and things really does make a difference. We mentioned we've collected a lot of chemistry data that we'll use to interpret sources of water and look at how it's connected down the lines of these water table contours I was talking about. And we actually, between the springs and the new wells we've found, we've actually been able to establish pretty good coverage. These dots, there's three different colors, but basically they're just showing all the spots where we're going to be able to measure this we have, or we'll be able to measure this suite of chemistry. And so this is going to be real interesting for us because We have some of the chemistry, we have some tools where we date the water and things, and you know, what you expect to see in general is if water's moving from south to north, you might expect that water in the closest to the mountains is a few years old or tens of years old, and then gets to be hundreds of years old and then thousands or even 10,000 of years old. And it's surprising, but the water, and when it's moving through that sand and gravel and silt, it moves really, really slow. So once we get our chemistry back and we get to plot all that stuff out on the map and look at those patterns, they're just more clues to how the aquifer is actually responding. And the other thing that those ages of waters give us an idea is they give us a sort of an independent way to look at that budget number, that recharge number. You know, how fast is the aquifer actually replenished? And then this is just the real simple, earliest little bit of chemistry we got to look at from some wells. The colors on these dots are basically just showing the salinity, essentially just the TDS, or the dissolved solids in the water. And something, this is just kind of something I put up that was pretty interesting. You know, early on there was thoughts based on just boots on the ground looking around that the springs in the mountains might be perched. It might be separate from the lower, from the aquifer water down in the middle of the valleys. Well, now we started to put together enough of this just early, you know, dissolved solids chemistry, and it's pretty interesting because basically these colors of these are just blue for the freshest water, and then the reds are the saltiest waters. And what you would expect is, if this was all connected, is that the water would enter as snow melt up in the mountains, and that would be the bluest of blue dots, as fresh as it gets. And the longer time it spent underground to pick up dissolved minerals, it would just get saltier and saltier. And this was kind of a real surprise to me. I didn't expect it at all. But you can see that the waters in the valley wells, and mind you, these are wells that with, you know, some places it's 600 or 700, 800 feet of water. And I would think that water took a long time to get there, and it's been there for a long time. But they tend to be fresher in almost every case than the spring waters around them. So, you know, if it went from point A to point B to point C, from snow into the ground to springs in the mountains, and then continuing on down to deep water in the valley aquifers, it should just get saltier and saltier and saltier. But so this was kind of our first hint early on, too, before we had much to go on, that, you know, we're learning something here, and maybe we do have some independent evidence that that those aquifers are kind of separate. We've collected twice as many samples, and we've got a bunch more information coming in from the labs that we just haven't got yet, but this was just a quick first look at the age dates from our first set of sampling. And what these have is the dark blue dots are too young to actually be dated by the method we have, but they're dark blue, they're modern, they're probably decades old, less than 50 years old. When you start getting up into the middle parts of the valleys, you've got water that's in the hundreds. These numbers are 300, 400, 500 years old. And then water is still generally moving south to north. And when you get kind of out towards the tops, now these waters are, well, here's one that's 6,000 and then 11,000 and 16 and 13. So these, you know, these get to be in that tens of thousands of year old range. And, well, I guess the last couple were just to show us folks where we have gotten a chance to do some aquifer tests. There was, we didn't have money to drill new wells like we would like to do, you know, in a perfect world. But fortunately, in each of these valleys, there was a cluster of wells that were exploratory water wells drilled in the late 70s or early 80s by the Phelps Dodge Corporation in Pine Valley, and then Earth Sciences Incorporated, I think. But so they were drilled looking for water back in the 70s or 80s, like I said, and then these wells were pretty much just capped and abandoned. But they were sitting there, and they were, in both areas, they were in a nice, close enough cluster that we thought we could use the central one as the pump test well and instrument the other wells to monitor and see if we could see what the draw, see if we could detect drawdown at those wells after 7 days of pumping as hard as we could. And what we do, you know, the biggest reason we do that is to try and get really good aquifer properties for in our case, to improve that groundwater model. And I won't stay on these. They're probably not that interesting. A couple slides of the quick results. I mean, this was the Pine Valley aquifer test, and this is basically showing the water level in the pumping well at different pumping rates. It turned out that we were in an area that wasn't really particularly transmissive, and once we were hoping to pump this at a pretty high rate, but once we turned the pumping up over about 500 gallons a minute, the water level in that well started dropping too much in that particular well for us to sustain it. So I think we had to back off, and we only ended up pumping that one in 7 days about 400 gallons a minute. And the Wawa one was much different. That well, as old as it was working really well. It cleaned up really well, and it was a nice permeable gravels. So we were able to pump that one about 1,200 gallons a minute for a week. That one's going to turn out to be a good test to give us a lot better information. And then this is one thing that the one big trick about this was that not having the opportunity to drill new wells. At these pumping rates and in these amounts of times, what we want to do is pump the center well as hard as we can, and then in wells that surround it, measure the response and how quickly the water level draws down. That gives us the information to make predictions in the future and to improve the model. But because we had to use existing wells, we were looking at trying to measure drawdown at wells that were a mile and a half to 2 miles away. And we knew that if we saw it, there were going to be really, really small water levels. And I have this slide I've been staring at lately, because what I did was I left all the water level measuring devices in those wells after the pump test was over and took them out just before Christmas. Because a lot of times you remove a bunch of water from the aquifer in one spot, you want to see what happens 2 miles away, you kind of just have to sit and wait. You would think it would be immediate, but you know, you've created this big void in the water table, and as water spills in from around to fill that back up, that drawdown will propagate out. And it may just be little bits, but basically what this green line in here is showing is it's only a tenth of a foot of drawdown. This little area right here, this shows the pumping rate. When we turned it on, stepped it around a little bit, and turned it back off. So this is 7 days, and the whole plot's going from October 10th to December 10th. But here's what happened in a well a mile and a half to the north. It's not much drawdown at all, but it's interesting because that's kind of the needle in the haystack we needed to give us some good new information to improve our model. And just so, just kind of a little show and tell of the few things we've been doing so far. And so we should be wrapping this project up around September of 2015, all in all. There's a lot yet to do in the office. Like I said, all that field information we've collected now is going to be all processed and everything. And really, the thing that's going to take the longest, I guess I've got them bulleted here. I'm just talking off the top of my head. But so we're waiting for the chemistry to come in, and we're going to wrap up the fine details of the interpretation of the aquifer tests. Some of the other things we've got to do, I was mentioning, were those recharge estimates and the discharge estimates based on the information we collected this past summer out in the field. And then this is really the big one, is synthesizing all of this and pulling all of this into our numerical model so that it's a tool that better is more useful for this area in kind of Walla Valley. That's something that's kind of a big thing we're working on. We're thinking we're getting a lot of good information out of it. And I'm available for questions now, afterwards, or at any time. I can leave my contact information if anyone's curious about what's going on out there and what we're finding. I don't know if you want to do any questions now or... Yeah? We're not. I mean, it would be nice if there was a focus. Because, you know, we've done work in Snake Valley and valleys to the north. Hamlin has not yet come up as an area of particular focus in these studies. Sort of like the money that we cobble together to fund these things to get a real improvement of detail kind of comes out of necessity with where the next development is proposed to occur in things.
Yeah.
There were some wells drilled, and there has been some work. I forgot to mention this to you, George. I've been to those meetings out in Snake Valley where you saw the Nevada USGS guys who had been doing work around the national park presenting their work and stuff. In Utah, we had been doing a study that did a lot of this same work and actually gave us, a huge leap forward in understanding that whole system and its connectedness to the surrounding valleys. Focusing around Snake and then kind of moving all of Snake Valley and then moving out toward Trulli and Fish Springs. And that includes some updated information for Hamlin. But there isn't yet a focus to do sort of an intensive study on Hamlin, especially that sort of southern two-thirds of it where there's not a lot of information. Yeah. Yeah, it stands for Basin Characterization Model. It is, I glazed over too many things. I didn't want to drag on for the full 140 hours. But the Basin Characterization Model. So it's a numerical model that you feed it parameters that control the infiltration of either rain or snow melt getting into the groundwater. So this thing takes fairly high resolution spatial precipitation on a monthly time step, and then it takes information telling you about how permeable the rocks and soils are that is trying to make its way through. There's a bunch more stuff that goes into it too, like aspect and elevation, a lot of meteorological information. And this has been developed by someone in the California USGS water office. He's been working on this for decades. It started in Yosemite National Park, where they actually had study plots where they could instrument the heck out of these pits and see what was happening, what was controlling the rain and the snow melt. Because what it has to do is it's got to melt, it's got to wet up the ground completely, it's got to get past all the roots and past the point of being able to get turned around and sucked back out in hot, dry weather. Once it gets past all that, then we can call it groundwater recharge. We know it's on its way to the aquifer now. And so he developed that model off those field studies and those plots throughout Sierra Nevada and has been upscaling it to where he can take what he learned from that now and simulate that for recharge over the entire Great Basin, not the entire western U.S. But, and so we periodically work with him and get the latest updates and get a lot of recharge estimates from that. But the most recent update we really have for that kind of goes through around 2006. His model is constantly improving, and there's more and more years to add to our long-term averages and stuff. So for this study, we're getting that updated through, I think through 2012 or possibly 2013. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. You know, it's interesting. It's hard to say. The different parts of the valley act differently. There will be springs. I think just based on, this route is more than just 3 years, but I always have it tabulated in my head because I'm a skier, so I know that 4 years ago was a really wet year. You know, that was a good year. The last 3 years have been terrible and making me wish I'd lived somewhere else. And so you'll see, and I've seen this, you'll see that the smaller springs that are up in the mountains, they'll dry up. They'll really slow down and they'll dry up completely. The bigger ones that are connected to larger sources of water underground, you know, they have a bigger reservoir that's draining out of them. Sometimes things like that can endure a really long drought. Same thing with water levels. If you go to these valleys and you go way down in the middle of these valleys where it's 600 feet of water and you measure the water level monthly for years, those things, they come up and go down so slow. But you get up into the areas where the water level's shallower and they don't have as much underground reservoir sort of behind them, and you know, they respond a lot faster. All in all, the aquifers are a little bit more buffered. They're noticeably more buffered from drought than surface water reservoirs and streams. Yeah, I mean, every one of these valleys is different, and it's hard to make real big generalizations. But, you know, sometimes, any use in there is just an additional stress on top of the drought that happens. In some places, it's a smaller stress than the drought. In other places, it's a larger stress than the drought, yes. Yeah?
Sufficient water is moving from these valleys to the northeast. Obviously, the connection is upstream as well, and how you work that into the model as far as water coming from the south.
Okay. So before we could build a model, we have to have a pretty good sort of generalization of how the things we're going to put into it, so that it can represent what's really going on. And so we need to know there's a certain amount. We have to start with a certain amount of water we're putting in, you know, the melting snow, and a certain amount of water that's coming out, because if it didn't come out, then the model would just fill it. It would just feel like an overflowing tub, right? And so, and we want to have an idea of what the actual real-life spring discharges are and how they change, and what the real-life water tables are. Because in our model, we want to make sure our model represents what we see happening now. But it's the big in and the out thing. And so in all these other valleys, if you want to create a model of, when I say all these other valleys, it turns out you can't make generalizations. They're all complicated. But up along the Wasatch Front, generally, those valleys are started out with the concept that it's a big bathtub and that they're surrounded by mountains for the most part, certainly on two sides. And the majority of the recharge to the aquifer happens from precip up there, because that's where it rains and snows the most. And that's going down. That's the in. We have to have some water coming out, too. And in a lot of these valleys, I'm going to think of Utah Valley, Salt Lake Valley. They've got the Jordan River down the middle, or Utah Lake in the middle, surrounded by springs, and it's where the water's coming back out. Ultimately, it's going to evaporate. But so that sort of completes the circuit in the model. In these valleys, there's water going in, but there's no water coming out in these valleys. It has to be going out somewhere. And based on a lot of other work, if I had my laptop, I'd have a couple other pictures I could show you guys from the Snake Valley study. But we started this study coming off of a previous 3 or 4 year study where we focused on Snake Valley was the focus of it, but it actually included all valleys that might be connected around it. So it included Snake, Hamlin, Pine, parts of Spring, the Western Sevier Desert, Fish Springs Flat, and Tule Valley, all the way up to the old salt flats, the Great Salt Lake Desert. And so the reason for that model, for that Snake Valley model, that we included all those was because all those valleys have some exchange between them to some degree. And to make sure that our budget's closed, basically, And what we learned from really looking at those other areas, and this has been suggested and kind of known for decades, but we really, really are learning more and more about looking at those other areas in depth, is that, well, Snake Valley almost certainly has a little bit of water coming in from spring. Probably not a lot, but a little bit. And a lot, well, and a much bigger amount that's probably going out to Tule Valley or the Salt Flats. But, you know, you could almost make, we know that from, we have lots of lines of evidence for that, but you could almost make a numerical model that represents it if you forgot about that. If you closed it up, called it a bathtub, and built a model around it, you could still make something kind of reasonable out of it. But you couldn't do it with these two valleys. You have to send it out of the model to somewhere else. Partly because of that, and partly because of this big chemistry data set that we've got for everywhere surrounding Pine and Wawa. Pine and Wawa were the areas that had the biggest blank spots on them in that study. Because at that time, we hadn't got to go in and find the new wells and stuff. But from what we've learned all around, sort of by process of elimination, it makes sense that those waters must be going to the north, and they could be going as far as Fish Springs in the Great Salt Lake Desert. But there are other places along the way that sort of make a little more sense because they're closer. Other places where regional old 10,000 plus year old groundwater is coming out of the ground and evaporating. And long answer, but that, so those are the things that made us think, you know we need to know more about the discharge end of the system to update this model. And based on looking at that for years, those seem like likely candidates. I mean, in all reality, I think what probably happens is a little comes out here, a lot comes out there, and some may make it all the way up to the north to Fish Springs or the Salt Lake Desert. But it makes sense to me. There are discharge areas of springs and wetlands and groundwater-consuming plants. There's one in Tule Valley that's so big, it basically discharges three times as much water from that, you know, big wetland ET area per year than is actually recharged in Tule Valley. Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that kind of that really helped. I mean, having done all this stuff ahead of time gave us a lot better idea of what to focus on for this one. Yeah.
You showed your attention at sort of theoretically, historically, going to the northeast. You're finding data now that shows that maybe going to the west to the east. Is it going to King Pine, Wawa Valley?
I would say, I don't know, but I would say I doubt it. And I don't think that sharp west to east thing is, I don't think you could draw those lines out valley-wide. I think that's something particularly interesting that we found right there, localized in that sort of three-mile radius set of new wells. And what that tells me is that things aren't as, you can't just, they're not as simple as we generalized before we had that information, and that there also probably is a big contrast in hydraulic properties. I think that what that's saying is the aquifer is probably a lot more permeable on one side of that than the other, and that's what's causing that water to drain that direction. But there's a lot of reasons to think that water is not moving from Pine directly to Wawa. Somebody, you might see that written somewhere. Someone might say that, and I wouldn't argue with, get just the one map. I wouldn't argue with the fact that, like, I do not think water from the valley here is moving through the Wawa Range into the valley here. Sometimes what you'll see, even going back as far as the old study, is because of the geology of these mountains, this black line is the basin divide, the surface water divide. What really might be happening is, because of the geology, the water that falls in this little slice of the mountains might end up going to Wawa instead of Pine. And sometimes that is kind of misinterpreted, because if someone just puts that out in numbers in a table, they would say, well, you know, some slice of water that fell in Pine ended up going to Wawa. But that's different than water in Pine Valley, in the valley, moving over into Wawa. So I don't really think that's happening. I think they're both heading north, getting into really permeable limestone rocks that are up in this area. And there's probably some blending. You know, I think they're probably coming together up here to the north somewhere. But yeah, I think that the valleys in the bulk of the valley part of it are very separate. Not really. I'm just looking around. No one else is. I just wonder if everyone else.
Yeah.
Could
you say anything at this point in terms of, based on the data collected, about source and use of the water coming out of the wall about 2 inches. Some large surface water.
Yeah. Well, the age is up here. I didn't show up, but that 400 and 300 are the ages of the springs. And the thing about springs is that there's always a caveat. There's always, if I collect water from a well that's screened over a certain depth, I'm getting a pretty good package of water the way it flows, and I can say, well, the water that actually hits that well screen, the bulk of that water is probably a certain age. At springs, if you could imagine, I don't have this slide, but if you could imagine all the aquifer water moving here, you know, sort of from your right to my left, the stuff that's near the surface, it comes in and it's got the shortest little flow path to that spring. And then there's also stuff that goes much, much deeper to the bottom and comes up. But a lot of times at springs, well, always at springs, they all come to one point and they mix. So that age is the flow weighted average age of a spring in particular. And so that's not to say that all the water that ends up there is, but yeah, the bulk of it is. And I think, you know, so that water's probably not coming from super far away. You know, it probably is recharging in these mountains, but we think that because of the way the structural geology is in that mountains and the Wawa Range, a lot of the snowmelt that gets in there gets channeled to that point directly. You know. Yeah. The numerical models we work on are good for that. There's sort of two different types of models. The simpler ones you start out with are called steady state models, and what they do is once you get that whole thing calibrated to average conditions, you know, put in average recharge and discharge and make it match average water levels, you can apply stress to that. You can, you know, put wells in it or change the climate or something, and you can see what happens to water levels once they've steadied back out. But you can't use that model to say it's going to take 10 years and 5 months. It's just an endpoint condition. And that's common. They're used all the time. Maybe more common than transient models. Transient models match. In those, you would match how the spring flows change and how the water levels change, you know, weekly or monthly. And you get it's much more, it's slower, it takes a lot longer to run on the computer, and there's a lot more information that goes into it. And those models, you can get timing. So what you're asking about water level changes and can it change directions, yes. But when you want to know about how long that's going to take, you have to have a transient model. A transient model is definitely a future step for this area. Part of the reason we don't have one is because it's worthless to make one if you don't have anything to calibrate it to. And there wasn't a lot of historical water level changes out here. It turns out nowadays, with the focus on these eastern Great Basin valleys, there's so much monitoring and things going on that, you know, in the not too distant future, I think we're going to start seeing some transient models that are well calibrated to look at those types of things. Well, okay. Oh, just in Wawa? We don't have the new estimates made. So this is what I discussed was the 1974 and 76 tech pups, where in Wawa Valley it was 8,000? Yeah. I have a hard time remembering numbers that I don't look at all the time. Yeah, I'm going back to the beginning here. Yeah, that's the entire surface water drainage. So that's that entire area of black line that encircles Wawa Valley. And it was still going back. 7,000 was the old estimate. So 21,000 in Pine and 7 in Wawa. And there are some fine points in this report where it does, just like I mentioned, and it talks about only 7 that falls inside this line goes to Wawa. A certain amount that falls inside the Pine Valley Circle, but on the Wawa Range, makes it's, you know, it's kind of semantics at that point. But I guess in this old report, the number was a little bigger than 7. If anybody remembers the number being a little bigger, that's why. Because a little bit of that Pine Valley water ended up getting directed to Wawa. But yeah, that's how much for the entire. That was the previous estimate, and we're working on providing an update for that. Which will be... I can almost guarantee it will not be drastically different. You know, the numbers won't be half of that. Well, Never mind. Did you just record that? I was going to say, they won't be half of that or double that, but I shouldn't say that because I... Yeah. They won't be four times that. Guarantee that. Deborah?
You know,
our conceptual idea of how flow works in these two valleys is that these two valleys don't really have a lot of flow coming into them. There seems to be, and because this potentiometric map, this water level map I have out that helps us look at directions of flow, at this was based on enough information. It's got pretty tight contour intervals, but regionally over the whole Great Basin, people have compiled enough water level data and kind of done big ones for a few decades. And so when you look at those, even these areas, there's groundwater in general regionally is split around here and moves north in these valleys, and then when you get out here to the Escalante Desert, moves south. So currently, we don't think there's really a lot of water coming into them. If you talk to somebody who's done a numerical model that includes Hamlin Valley, they will undoubtedly, in their model cells as their runs go, have a little bit of water that looks like it leaks back and forth between the two. But by and large, it's not like a Snake Valley to Tule Valley or a spring to Snake. It's not one of those places where you'd see a big arrow on a map and think there's water coming in. The big thing here is really that that all the water that's available from the valley aquifers is going out subsurface and entering other valleys. Yeah. They can cut me out.
In part of these, I remember, I think, three steps, so it doesn't mean there's a larger discussion, but some discussion about a possibility of multi-level of an aquifer, kind of more shallow aquifer, and very deep aquifer, and that can be behaving quite differently. Is that part of the analysis that you can address that?
I would say if we isolate it, no. I think that, what there have been regionally in the whole sort of carbonate and alluvial aquifer system is there's discussion about whether the limestone that's underneath the valley fill are two separate aquifers or they're one. Does that sound like you're thinking of? Well, now, I mean, since about 2006, the state of Utah paid a couple $1 million to drill observation wells, you know, through Snake Valley, Tule Valley, on up to Fish Springs. And just as an example, in those areas, what they did, specifically to look at that, was they might drill a hole that's 1,500 feet deep that goes through a bunch of fill and then hits the limestone and goes down into the limestone. And in that big hole, they'll seal it all up and put three smaller pipes, since we have three separate observation wells that are accessing different levels. And we can look at the water levels in those to see if water's moving up or down between them, and we can look at the changes and see if they're changing the same. So in a lot of places where we've looked, those seem to be almost fully connected. And I mean, we haven't looked everywhere, and undoubtedly there are places where they're fully separated and fully connected, but in a lot of places they do seem to be really pretty well connected. Here it's a little different because we're really just focusing on looking at the aquifers and the basin fill. We don't have any wells. For the most part, we don't have any information or any wells down in the bedrock that's underneath them. For instance, in Pine Valley, there aren't any. And there's estimates of the valley fill being really quite deep, and, you know, deeper. We have wells that are almost 2,000 feet deep there, and they're just all in fill. There are wells in Wawa Valley that go all the way through the fill and hit what's underneath them are volcanic rocks, not the carbonate. It's the carbonate of the limestone that tends to be the big connected regional aquifer.
You mentioned the depth below ground surface is approximately 600 feet. Are you claiming that that's the same
as the
Pine Valley?
Well, there's a distinct difference between... I showed that little cluster of wells down here where the potentiometric contours were shifted. From east to west, those water levels dropped 400 feet in a mile. So on the east side of that, the water levels are 300 feet, and on the other side, they're 700. So that's an example. And in Wawa Valley, and if you look at the water level, you know, altitudes, they're not the same in those valleys. Pine Valley's aquifers at a higher altitude than the water table in Wawa. In Wawa Valley, the water levels down in the southern end are as deep that we measure are as deep as 800 feet. And then when you get up north of the highway, up toward the hard pan and stuff out there, they're more like 200 or 300 feet. Still too deep for, you know, plant roots to consume.
We've seen the low elevations, the water levels lower than the fall water.
Yep. Yeah, so you asked earlier if I thought water was going from Pine Walla. I mean, the two criteria that for that are, is it higher in Pine Walla? Yeah, and then the other is there connected? And that's what I really don't think you'll see. I don't think the connectivity is there, except maybe a real deep areas beyond what we're looking at to say anything about. Should we move on? Justin.
Thank you so much. If you have other questions, you don't say here, what, 3 more days?
Oh, yeah.
I'll see you over here. Feel free to stop doing that to the meeting and get some more information.
Yeah, I'm easy to do.
I do have one question for you, Bill. Before I have noticed your study of Wawa Valley breaks off right here.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not doing anything with this area?
We're not. We've made our study areas have pretty much been the defined surface water divide.
The surface water divide.
I completely think those areas are connected, and that's why we're looking at measuring the discharge up around Cedar Lake.
But the reason I ask is this is what we manage is the Wawa Basin.
Okay. Well, I think that is a good thing. We have the Sevier Lake area you have there, we have that connected in sort of catalog as a separate surface water basin that includes, you know, Delta and all the way on that.
Okay, yeah.
But we're not, so our study, when I say our study area, I'm looking at chemistry and trying to connect the dots to these areas to the north. I draw those because they're easier to talk about.
But when you come up with recharge data, it's for this area here.
That it is.
And so we won't have any information on this.
Yeah. But
the reason I ask though is you can see these sources here, the proposed sources. You know, we've got some decisions to make up there too.
Right.
So I just needed that for my clarification.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what is actually currently approved or perfected in both Pine and Wawa Valley. Right? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Kurt Best. I'm the regional engineer for Water Rights. Work out of the Cedar office. If you look for Pine Valley, there is currently about 1,350 acre feet of approved or perfected water rights. The majority of that, I think, would be stock watering rights within the valley, some spring rights. I question a little bit that there's really that much actually being diverted. I think sometimes we count twice or three or four times, maybe sometimes. So our water rights may say there's so many head of livestock for each water rights, but you may be counting the same cow as you use from one lot to the next several times. So that number may be inflated a little. But that's what our records show. Okay, Wawa Valley, the total there is 8,000 acre feet. It's already approved and perfected. However, 5,000 acre feet of that, there's a prior filing on Wawa Springs for 2898, and then there's another 2186 acre feet from the House Range. Those are both very old mining claims that were abandoned in the 30s, so they have not been used since the 30s. In fact, once this filing on Wawa Spring actually fed the old town of Moot House. And since that mining operation went out of business, the Winches came in and filed on that very same spring, and this is what the Winches now were. Or have a right to convert. It's the same source. In fact,
Mark, maybe you can answer this. It looks like you guys actually cut into their own pipeline.
I mean, the pipeline that you guys come down, and then you see also a line where it looks like no pipeline goes all the way out to me.
And you can see where the line is all the
way. I guess the point here is of that 8,000 acre feet, 5,000 of it hasn't been used since the 30s and probably will never be used.
One question. When you talk on the house, I mean, is that a new house?
No. That would be my Okay, that filing is way up here to the north of Spirit Lake.
Way up there.
That's another reason why I asked you, because of that 8,000 acre feet, over 2,000 acre feet of it comes way up there to the north. And that's a little mining.
You know, just to coincide, when we do make the BCM, it is not much more work for us to give you a number for that boundary versus the boundary outside. So we can just do it.
That's good. Okay. So if you take all of those two springs that aren't being used, then you have the spring for Wawa Spring that Lincoln's using now. If you look at all the other sources in the Wawa Valley, you come up with 380 acre feet. That's the underground and the spring. The majority of stock water runs. And even in that case, you may be counting thousands of people once too. So, but that's what the right savior is.
Yeah.
Let me go to the next slide, and then I'll come back to that map. Let's now look at what has been applied for in Pine Valley, but not yet approved. In Pine Valley, you have the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District that filed for 15,000 acre feet, and then you have Beaver County that has filed for 13,900 acre feet. In Pine Valley, Wawa Valley, but now keep in mind you've got to separate those two, I guess, basins there. We got some of this that's in the Spirit Lake area. Currently, Central Iron County is filed for 12,000 acre feet, level irrigation, 123,000 acre feet. Most of that goes where it's going to emerge, which is farther to the north. This is the freshwater filings right here. Emerald Creek Minerals, 1,000 acre feet, Beaver County, 6,650. Emerald Creek, another 500, and then you've got Allenite, 6,500 for a total of 149,650 feet. I think it's safe to say there's not that much water available. We also look at the brine water, which is part of this MLP mineral operation. They have filed for a total of 270,000 acre feet of brine water to find out Spirit Lake. Okay, let's go back after this map. This shows the distribution of where all the points of diversion are throughout those two valleys. To the north here in Wawa Valley, the orange right here. These are the Emerald Peak filings where they plan to mine the brine off the Sevier Lakes. We're looking at a couple hundred thousand acre feet of finally there, but that is just the brine water that's in a perch aquifer. They plan on mining and evaporating off of the harvesting materials. These light blue is that 123,000 acre feet of filing by Melville Irrigation Company. Again, that's located in that Spear Lake area. The early filings for Central Iron County, they're in the southern end of the Pine and Wawa Valleys here. yellow.
The blue, the dark blue you see here, that's what's going to prove that and already perfected the existing point. See, the pink dots that represent where Beaver County filing, those versions are located. And then the purple line in this area is Utah Hanover. So, that kind of gives you a view of where water is currently being used and also where it's being proposed to be used. Any questions so far?
I didn't see how long that
was in 2006. So it actually is something that's rather than any other questions? Okay. Let's talk about our current policy. This is our current policy for Pine Valley. As you can see, the current policy limits the appropriations to small single-family domestics equal to a quarter acre of irrigation, 10 head of livestock, and one family, or 1.73 acre feet. Wawa Valley, same, limited to small single-family domestics, quarter acre of irrigation, 10 head of livestock, and one domestic. So, our current policy doesn't allow us to prove any of those current filings because they all fall outside of our current policy. That's why we're here today. Because we realize, you know, these projects cannot move forward under our current policy. There's been a lot of questions about this immediate need for water. That part of the policy typically is what we throw in these areas where we limit the small single-family domestics. Basically, what we're saying is for these little homes to go out and develop in these areas, we want to make sure you are serious, you want to be ready to develop, build your home. And that's just typical language in some of these areas where we have a policy limit of the small family domestics. It's really tied to that. Okay. Pass these out. Over here, one. Next slide. And this will be, you say, it'll be posted on our website, James. And we can also print out some copies if you don't have them. We may not have enough here. I'll give them to you guys to make passes out, so you can all look at it here. Okay, we've looked at our current policy. We realize it's limited to single-family domestics. We can't go beyond that in our current policy. So we're now proposing a new policy for these two valleys. Everybody get a copy then? Okay. Let's go through this. I'll just read it. This is the proposed new policy for Pine and Wawa Valley. It says the state engineer believes there is unappropriated water available in the underground aquifer system of Water Right Area 14, which is Pine Valley, and Water Right Area 69, which is Wawa Valley and Spirit Lake area. In the past, applications in these areas were limited to small filings proposing to appropriate sufficient water for the requirements of one family, quarter acre of irrigation, and 10 head of livestock, or 1.73 acre feet. Let's do my voice goes up.
The state engineer will now consider applications for all uses and reasonable amounts. Applications will be considered based on their individual merits in accordance with Section 73-3-8 of the Utah Code. What's that?
Section 73-3-8 is the section of the code that tells us what the state engineer has to consider when either approving or rejecting an application. The list of criteria that must be met in order to approve an application. And any application that comes before us, we review based on that criteria.
So it's so.
On that last policy, I like the language in what it shows you much more immediately use one test.
Keep in mind, that's what I was saying. That's typically what we reserve for small appropriations. Yeah.
Does 73-3-8 address that at all?
No.
Okay. No, does it address beneficial use?
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny to get back to the flat top. I like to read what that quote says out of the one
And that language was specifically taken out to make it more consistent with
73-3-8.
It doesn't prohibit it, but it also doesn't, they really aren't saying anything about that.
To me, that's a real issue.
Well, keep in mind, interbasin transfers from one basin to the other happen all over throughout the state. All over. In fact, I have, even in this area, we have some additions down. In Berlin Enterprise, there's a tunnel coming from the Santa Clara River drainage, tunneling over, dumping water into Kennel Creek, which fills Newcastle. It's been operating since early 1900s. Those type of transfers happen all over the state, so I don't think it's something that's prohibited.
Do you like it issues like the same in Utah, to the test of the lead in Colorado to the basin?
saying there's other bases that we've actually not had included. So that it's just a true over-allocated case.
Yeah, sorry.
see those kind of issues.
I didn't bring my phone. 7348 talks about standing there looking at the patient. If there is no appropriate water in that basin, that's the first thing. That's a positive thing. Second thing is that we don't care the rest of others. We talk about monitoring well. That's a real, we use that quite a bit in our actions. Now, we need to monitor what's happening here. We need to get some feedback. So this is one appropriated water. It talks about being, the project being economically and physically feasible and not detrimental to the public welfare. So that's actually it says, is this application filed in good faith and not for the purposes of speculation and monopoly? The last question is about, will this application unreasonably affect public recreation, natural scenic environment, or public health? How does the work all sound? So, don't say anything about the new studies, or don't say anything about the new studies, but that's kind of the general information for us to look at. But monitoring laws need to be optimal for an application. This monitoring should have happened. You have a picture coming up. So we will often put conditions in there to help make sure that we're meeting those criteria. We look at the financial ability, the responsible financial ability of an applicant. That's part of that 17-year criteria. Economically, physically feasible to be able to do what you're supposed to. I think that covers the criteria. It's pretty general, but that's. The first problem is to do a critical thing is you put water there and it's going to put the rest of somebody else. And so we want to make sure that we're doing things that do not put the rest of it. So there's the water available. So I asked the question, where do we go? Is there? And I'm not quite sure. How do people kind of get some temple water there? You see a 7,000 in water line, it doesn't give me a lot of confidence that there's a whole lot of water there. And I see 8,000 is utterly approved. But I also hear in the 30s, you know, 5,000 of that might have disappeared, but then I see what recent court decisions in the Supreme Court have said about what I'm going to do unless there's some kind of court action against those rights. And I have people coming before me, even right now, that are taking up those rights that haven't been used since before the 30s. They're finding change applications, like saying, say, you can't even look at that. You can't look at that, you just have to go ahead and print those applications. Because there has been no dedication to the rights of them at all. Last year, the Senate Bill 190 got so messed up about sitting in your authority and people not trusting the state of the way to do the right thing and wanting to do a proper job on government and exempting several groups of people and families of people that we just take part of to our success and are terrible to speak of to Senator Alford and the response to the bill. If that's so twisted from what we originally proposed, we actually. Please give us some authority to get the benefits of use. We're not inclined at this point to do that. But if there's some more questions about some of these old things, and about what the impact that we do that. In my opinion, still goes back to if I live in an area, I've got water that's available, I have water that's clean that I can use, and if somebody else wants to do that, I'm just going to change the state of the use. The responsibility of what happened to use. So we need to be very careful about
situation that we already identified. We've got time to fix that. So it's not comfortable with the process to get to the point where we get to have to tell people 45% of you at some point they're probably going to have to stop pumping all that as well. You're going to have to stop pumping. You're going to have to stop mining. You're going to be doing what you want to do. And that's not a comfortable position for me. And it's not a comfortable position for those who are using the water. And it's not going to have to go through that. So you know you can't get to the
It appears that in the year, year and a half, perhaps it was all time to us this month, we were following, we were likely following your recharge development testing the next month. How will that impact any decisions you know that you get this point for the policy change and start to produce in the next month? How will you adjust
those numbers? If we can do that, how can we do that?
Impossible to purchase those two components.
Well, I'm not
start out with over 500. I don't think anything is impossible.
Well, I'm talking about moving forward.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that Central Iron County is granted 8,000 feet, but then someone like Beaver County wants to purchase those 8,000 feet instead of appropriating 8,000 and 8,000 feet, you tell Beaver County to justify the purchase of that water and have a level there. That, I don't know if that's possible. It is possible.
That's something we've got to consider about how much can be allocated. And who can connect to use that? And then somebody file an application, pile the water up, and then force everybody to come to them and say, okay, you've got to come to me now, because I'm here. I'm going to pay me to use the water to make a public resource. I've got to struggle with that. And I don't know if that's the best way to do that. Somebody came in today and said, I want to put water today. Somebody's filed and I'm not going to use that water for another few years, but I've got to come.
So most of
Makes our job easier keeping it the same.
Sorry, Mark, I want to help you later.
just now that back here. The wildlife that are in your application process.
Wildlife, like wildlife uses?
Yeah, wildlife in your application.
The criteria 7338 talks about the public recreation, natural stream environment, and public welfare issues. Broadly interpreted, that in adults, those kind of native natural things can be considered a local. I think if we were going to come back in and propose water development is going to dry up all natural sources, we could actually come back and condition some of our approval saying we've got to put stuff across out, we've got to maybe water access so animals will be there, have the ability to be able to get to water. And not dry areas up. Make sure we've done things like that. We're trying to do something to that. We're very specific to the problem and the problem. What we have to do. Those are issues that we have. Other questions?
What's today?
It would be March 4th.
Without getting jobs and everywhere else.
they have, it was modern enough to not go to the city declines and the sort of that.
So only most people really rely on the federal amount that are well down in the Union Valley, and I doubt that the water is higher, and I think the river on the water is I don't think we've been monitoring long enough in the areas. I know the areas where there's, I think, from what I'm familiar with, the areas where the stockfall are really open before those outside of the valley centers. And those areas were often first separated from the
yeah, so we're trying to work to see what is actually feeding those stockwells and make sure that we're not having an impact. But we're also looking at that deep off the ground in the middle of the valley, which there appears to be water there. So can we put water from that aquifer and not affect the stockwells? That's what we're trying to figure out. So it's slow from the disconnection. See how it's out there. That's something that we're looking at. I'm looking at this, I would say, you'll possibly do that if you need to have a question. But it also needs to be a differentiation between using water in your case and using this in your case. I think, you know, these other basins, there is not a good allocation in place as well. At least the water is being put under the water off. And if the water is coming out of the water, and the condition is taken over the location,
I appreciate the comment. You know, the state of Nevada has a 20% rule, which is about 20% of the amount of water. 20% of it has to stay in the valley. There is no such legislative direction for the state of New York to make those kind of decisions in the state. But the office is going to come into play and be very sensitive to that concept of the national
economy. Hey, any other questions or comments? Okay, appreciate you so much coming here and being available. If you have comments, please get them to us by the 6th. And
we're on. I think up to a minute, I'm giving you all the plates.
No, you're a lot late, but yes.
The United Nations gave the EPA complete control of the water around the world. And that means they can decide who lives and who dies. Water, your body is like 98% water. Water is extremely important. You must fight to keep your water rights and your water. I didn't get to hear what you're saying. And I have taken on the EPA in Sacramento. They're very corrupt people.
And one thing, we have made a recording of these proceedings. They will be available on our website. You can actually go there and listen to this all over again if you'd like to do that. And PowerPoints, I know our people.